Today, I want to talk about a topic which I have been personally contemplating over the last few days. And that topic is our debt to the past. How we owe something to the past. Now, I know we have spoken a lot about the present moment as being the only moment that exists. We understand that the future is something that has not yet taken place, so therefore it does not exist, and the past is something which took place, so it no longer exists except as memories. And the only thing that really does exist right now is the present. Now, some thinkers or some explorers of time have made a case for the present containing the future, the present containing the past. In other words, one can move within these realms without having to be bound. And we have in one of our lectures previously, I don't know if it was, yeah, probably it was during the recordings when we were recording, we've spoken about time travel, how it's possible to move at least energetically within time without being bound to the present. Now, obviously, to a certain extent, we are stretching the definitions of time when we say such things. I cannot take my physical being with all of its energy and whatever and move it to other parts on the time-space continuum. So when we spoke about time travel, we spoke of it in terms of energetic travel. In other words, you can energetically travel into the future and influence the kind of future that will unfold. You can energetically travel into the past and correct or amend things that took place in the past. So in this way, you can make adjustments. You can make modifications. You can influence the pattern of events. A lot of people speak in terms of positive thinking, about optimism, about sending good energy into the future so that you can attract or bring about the best possible results. And other people speak in terms, or maybe even the same people, speak in terms of dealing with the past, healing the past, putting the past to sleep, or forgiving in the past. And sometimes we speak about just dealing with the present, just feeling the present, just being in the present. And sometimes when we speak about the present, we, to get to that point of being fully in the present and existing right now, we have to deal with the past and we have to deal with the future. Because if you're afraid of the future or you have some strange understanding about the future or you are very disturbed about the past, it prevents you from dealing with the present. So it seems that the present, it seems that time is a very important part of any spiritual evolutionary process. Now, it's very hard to define time, and it's very hard to get a grasp on what time is. And I don't feel like getting into that right now because we all think about time as a sequence of events, a sequence of moments going from where we are now to the next, to the next, to the next. And it doesn't really matter how you imagine that to be. You can think of it like a very fast film with unlimited frames per second, or you can think of it just as a continuous series of events, or you can think of it in any way you want. It just is like that. And we always think, the steps that will be in the later on, that's the future. The steps that I've already been through, that's the past. So practically speaking, whether it is absolutely correct or not, we all think of time in terms of a passage of moments in a sequence of events. And from that point of view, I want to talk about our debt to the past. Because what is now is a product of all these little steps that have led up to it from the past. If it was not so, and nobody would dispute that it's not so, but if it were not so, The future could be any insane thing that could just occur out of nowhere. If it wasn't a sequence of events, we would be in a state of hysteria all the time, because anything could happen at any time. You couldn't depend on anything, because everything is up for redefinition at any moment. Of course, there are people who, you know, fear a meteor from the sky is going to come and land on their house, or all of a sudden the plane that they're in is going to blow up, or all of a sudden there's going to be some kind of, you know, war or whatever can instantly occur. This can also happen. But these are not irrational events. In other words, these events take place very much bound to time. That meteor has been traveling from way out there in space and is on its way down right now. So therefore, it's not some irrational event that just occurred. It's a step-by-step progression from outer space to my house. So we all understand this, that we can depend, and that's a very important point, we can depend on the next moment because we know what the present moment is. And I think this point is not considered by us in our everyday life. We just accept it blindly. We don't consider the implication of it. In other words, there is a dependability that we can count on. There are systems we can count on. There is law, physical law, that we can count on. And that means that everything that's about to take place in the very next moment is totally and completely dependent on right now. The future is absolutely tied to the present. Sometimes people think that they can pray to God and there'll be some mystical, instantaneous transformation of some huge proportion which will change everything for the good. Most religions have this idea in them that suddenly and unexpectedly there will be an intervention by God onto this world where all quote-unquote demoniac forces, all quote-unquote evil things are destroyed and goodness will prevail. Even you talk today to religionists, they feel that the only way to deal with this world is that there'll be sudden destruction of such massive proportions that all of the evil will be washed away. Now, this is a very interesting point, because to a certain extent, what such people are saying is that we are not in control of the future. It is out of control. Everything is moving towards chaos. Everything is breaking down in sinfulness. Everything is becoming more and more horrible in the world. And the only way it can be dealt with is that if there's some cataclysm or some kind of destruction, or the four horsemen of the apocalypse come and transform everything. Now, the reason why I brought up this point about the next steps in the future being totally and absolutely bound to the present is because I want to deal with this fantasy or this fantastic idea of sudden and irrevocable transformation, or at least in terms of it being relevant to spirituality. If you think about it, there have been instances of sudden and irrevocable transformation on the Earth planet. We know from geological investigation that there were dinosaurs, and then suddenly there were no dinosaurs. We know that there was an instantaneous, practically, transformation of this planet. And we have seen various evidences of huge objects from space having impacted on this planet. There are places where there have been huge asteroids that have hit. like in Siberia, there's one, there's others they find all the time, which, when they hit, create such a disturbance in the atmosphere that it can change everything. And after that, life as we knew it on the planet changed. But how does that relate? The way that does not relate to the spiritual fantasy is that it wasn't after the asteroid hit, if that's what happened, that everything bad became wiped out and good replaced it. It was just that there was life, it changed, and now there's another form of it going on. There was a sequence of events that continued to go on, but in a different direction due to a very significant event. So waiting for cataclysm to transform the world is not very practical. In other words, if your understanding of how the future will get better is dependent on huge destruction or huge cataclysm everywhere, you're probably going to be disappointed. Some people think that when the end of the Mayan calendar comes in 2012, there'll be some phenomenal transformation of everything. All things as we know it will change. Now, if you think about it, all of this is some kind of illusion where we are very eager to create change. We're very eager to have some enormously powerful influence make what is bad good. But it doesn't happen like that. This is not the lesson of history. If you even look at the lessons of history, if you see where people make revolutions in countries to think that it's going to change everything, that everything will be better, it doesn't exactly work like that. There's even a saying in French, as much it changes, as much it stays the same. We as people, we as beings who interact with others, even in a national, communal, or social context of any kind, don't change that much. We make little changes, incremental changes. We transform gradually in the evolutionary process. Our transformations are taking place in a very systematic and very historically dependent manner. Reality is very different from fantasy. And one of the most important things to understand in this is that we owe an enormous debt to the past. Okay, we can forget the past because it doesn't exist anymore. We can forgive the past because there were some mistakes. We can also understand that the past is a time where everyone did what they thought was right at the moment they did it. We can look back in the past and we can see occasions where serious mistakes were made in our own lives, but we can understand that at that time we thought this was the best thing to do. Naturally, this is the way we can look at these things, and we would not be wrong by looking at them like that. Yet I want to talk about a different way of looking at that past in terms of what we are because of it, how we have a debt to it. So I saw a documentary the other day about how they were capturing a certain terrorist, and one of the statements of one of the good guys who was killed just in the course of his duty was, just make sure my death is not in vain. In other words, he was telling his partner that I'm dying now because I protected you. Now, you owe a debt to me for that. And that debt is that what we were dying for, what I was dying for, should be accomplished. In other words, that person, the partner, or those involved in the project, owed a debt. It's the debt of the sweat. It's the debt of the lives of those who have come before to bring us to this moment. Let me give another example. Sigmund Freud is somebody who has been often ridiculed or criticized or disregarded to a certain extent amongst modern or certain modern psychiatrists, psychologists. Yet, we owe all of our terminology, all of the ways in which we speak about psychological issues to Freud. He systematized the whole vocabulary of how you speak about psychological situations or events or disturbances. Before that, people would use very generic terms like, oh, this person is crazy, or this person is completely bewildered, or this person is confused. And because the exact psychological disturbances were not very systematically researched or understood, treatments were very primitive. Lock them up or dump them in freezing cold water. And when he gave names to everything and he defined particular disturbances, it changed the whole science and made it grow enormously from that point. Now, you may disagree totally with Freud. You may disagree completely with these ideas. But when you speak about it in terms of negating those ideas. You speak about it in terms of negating or transforming or changing or converting. In other words, these ideas form the basis of all discussion. Yeah, the whole point is, the whole point is that whatever you speak about psychologically, even if you're against it or you think you want to redefine it, you're doing it in terms of the original research, the original creation of Freud. Now, how is that important to us who are interested in spiritual life? Well, actually, it's quite obvious, and I'm sure you've already started cooking this idea in your head as I'm speaking. Many times when I have been lecturing or talking with anybody, I've found myself in a very uncomfortable situation. And that uncomfortable situation is that I find myself saying, it's not like that. In other words, my discussion now is in reference to something which is different than the way I thought it to be then. So it's not like that. It's like this. And subtly, I find myself sometimes saying, now, isn't it silly that people thought like that when actually they can think like this? And subtly there's this danger of thinking, we know better, or I know better than them. And this brings in a certain pride and a certain elitism. It divides you from others. It creates an us and a them. And so when I'm talking like this, and I don't do it purposefully, it just comes in due to the nature of language and the nature of this discussion and concept, I feel badly. I listen to myself doing that and I say, gee, that's just really immature. That's not nice. That's just disrespectful. So I always try to modify what I'm saying, and yet it still turns out that way. There's these concepts which were understood in the past. There's this way of doing something from the past. And it just doesn't work anymore. So no matter how much I try to get it in my head that it's not right to be always saying things in reference to a contradiction of what was in the past or a modification of what was in the past, it just happens. So therefore, finding myself forced to deal with this redefinition of spiritual concept, I had to somehow or another understand what was really happening. So I was very deeply meditating about this. This is the last few days. Deeply meditating about the past. Deeply meditating about that we have a debt to the past we can't avoid. And that debt is, for example, all of the spiritual terminology we use, all of the spiritual concepts that we use. We all have terminology which we just accept as the basis of our discussion. Like eternality as a term, the term eternal. Okay, I may try to redefine what it means, but it is a very important concept. We don't find that concept being very well defined amongst scientists or amongst philosophers of simply the everyday world. As far as they are concerned, by definition, everything is temporary. By definition, everything is changing. Therefore, they use the term in the sense of saying, it's not eternal. It doesn't last forever. But for spiritualists, we are just concerned with the opposite of that. We're just concerned with the eternal. We want to get to the state of eternality. We want to get rid of the state of temporality. Now, I don't agree with that last statement I just made, but I have to speak about it in terms of that statement. Because I owe a debt to those who have come up with this term eternal and made it a duality in terms of the term temporal. Yeah, your connection's not always very great, but I'm saying that I have to deal with it because I'm dealing with the concept of eternal, those who created that concept of eternal and put it in opposition to the concept of temporal. In other words, when we speak about temporal, right, we say not eternal. When we speak about eternal, we say it's not temporary. We say eternal, never dying. Dying is part of temporal. In other words, we define one in terms of what it's not in the other. Hey. So this makes a very interesting concept that we need these balancing factors to even think about or even describe different concepts which are important to us spiritually. What we see is that all spiritual concepts that have been defined in the past have a very important value to us today. You take a concept like karma, and you can define it in different ways. You can understand it for different reasons, but you always have to deal with the concept of action and reaction. You have to deal with the concept of consequences, that what you do now has consequences for the future. So when I say we have a debt to the past, it means that what we have now is built upon the energy or the work of the past. So we pay for the work of the past. And so we have a debt that we have to pay. For example, when we speak about redefining terms from the past, we're not creating new ones. We're just redefining previous terms, previous understandings of terms. So in other words, our whole understanding of what is now is intimately connected to what we thought it was then. We are standing on the foundation of the past and moving up a step. And this step that we have taken depends on that foundation. So I owe a debt to those and whatever work those persons have done to create that foundation. That's very important. For example, if you are in an Eastern tradition, you owe a debt to those who created it in the past. When I use the word debt, sometimes people think that means you're paying for something you wanted. That means you owe because it's something good and you owe something in repayment. But I don't use the word debt in that way. I'm not speaking about it as far as being favorable or an unfavorable debt. I'm just talking about it that it's a debt. Even if I think that foundation that I'm stepping from is wrong. Still, in my new reference point, I'm stepping from it to a new spot. I owe a debt to the old spot as giving me the stepping stone. I may not have to pay anything to that foundation. I don't owe anything to the foundation. It's not that kind of a debt where something has to be given to pay off the debt. But if I were to not acknowledge what I'm doing, that would not be proper. Of course, you can do it. Anybody can just go out and do things on the basis of everybody else's work and not say anything about it. You can do that if you want. But it would not be a very nice way to exist. That's how I feel. My value structure says, this is not an absolute principle, but my value structure says that if I'm going to be using the work and energy of others and not acknowledge it, then I'm somehow or another some kind of a thief. It's important for me, and I think for all of us, that's why I'm saying this, to recognize our debt. Now I'm going to change terminology. I'm not going to call it a debt anymore. I'm going to call it a dependency. In other words, what I am now is dependent, in a certain sense, on what I was in the past. But I'm not dependent on anything in terms of it is still something which is feeding me. It is still something which is I'm having an interaction with and getting nourishment from. I would call it more a time-based dependency. In that previous step in time, I am dependent on that because I have moved to the next step in time. And yet at the same time, you could say there's a kind of dependency in terms of nourishment, because even if I'm just contradicting the previous steps, that's giving me something to do. That's giving me something to talk about by saying it wasn't like that. So to a certain extent, there is a kind of symbiotic relationship between me and my past. Now the question comes, how do I see that past? Is my symbiotic relationship based on the negation of it? Or is my symbiotic relationship based on building upon it? Or destroying it? Or how does that relationship work? Or is it something that we can say is it something where I should acknowledge it? I should accept it and therefore respect it? It's something that I should think of in terms of a deep, fundamental, and intimate connection with my own life. Now, when I'm dealing about this kind of, let's say, respect, you know, sometimes we talk in terms of forgiveness, that we have to forgive that which others do. Sometimes it's not so easy. You know, when I think about things in the past, I think about things that have been done, and I think about having to forgive, to just forgiving, honestly, these things. It's somehow not a complete process to me. It seems like something's missing. So I have to go through various stages to get to this point. I think the first stage I have to do is acknowledge that, yes, it happened. And yes, it happened like this. And then after I get upset with all these things, I get to the point where I just have to accept, okay? Yes, it was so. Now, one thing that I do as a person is I try to place myself in the shoes of others who do things. In other words, I want to understand it from their point of view, why they do what they do. In other words, you can't really understand others until you are them. You walk in their shoes in exactly the same situation, because you may do the same thing if you were in their situation. So you place yourself in their situation, in their time, in the influences that they have in their life, in that which is around them at their time. And then you can understand that, yes, they too did what they thought was right at the moment they did it. I mean, to a certain extent, I can easier understand that I did what I thought was right at the time I did it, because I can remember why I did things. And I say, yes, at that time it made sense to me. But it's much harder to place yourself in somebody else's shoes, to place yourself in somebody else's situation and feel that way, because usually we ascribe to others some evil, horrible, nasty motive for doing what they did, or else we just say they're complete idiots. And neither is it an excuse for what people do. It's not like you can excuse people because they think that it's right to kill somebody at a certain moment, therefore we say, oh, that's okay. If somebody kills somebody, the judge says, okay, you might have thought it was right at that time. Do you still think it's right? Anyway, whatever, you're going to go to jail because what you did was wrong according to the law that we have written here. But I'm not talking about this kind of right or wrong or judging others. This is not the point I was trying to make. People do what they think is right the moment, the time they do it. So similarly for all religions, so similarly for all the development of all religions. In the development of religions, there are people who develop things because they think it's the right thing to do. Now, why they think it's so is questionable. But accepting that this is why they did it and acknowledging that is very important in order to rectify it for the future. It's important to acknowledge the past, acknowledge how what we are today is dependent on the past, and to accept that all that we are doing now, spiritually, when we speak about it, when we talk about concepts like we are doing right now, it is very much dependent on all the training, all of the philosophy, all of the practices we have done in the past. The terminologies that we speak about, even when we talk about what is right, when we talk about it spiritually, it seems that this is connected to God-given right, or God's idea of what is right. So these concepts are dependent on the development of religion in the past. I mean, I don't want to get too much into this because it's very dangerous territory right now, but historically speaking, even the idea that there's one God is a historical event. It's an event that took place which transformed people's ideas from there being a multiplicity of gods to there being one. It changed people's ideas from there being a multiplicity of gods to there being one. If you, for example, think about even in the Vedic traditions, the Vedic histories, there were many gods which were spoken of, many gods which were worshipped. And then came Bhagavad Gita, and there's one God again, one God, not again. There is one God, Krishna, supreme. Now, this is also there in the Egyptian culture. There were many gods, and then there was this one pharaoh who decided, we're not going to have many gods anymore. We're going to have one God, and that one God was going to call Amun-Re. And you know, there are many interesting discussions about how people's original understanding of what they had as religion was based on the universe above. It was based on the stars. It was based on the planets, which were bigger or smaller, because they had a lot of time to look at night at that huge display in the sky above them. And so the heavens became a very important aspect in their lives. And religions developed based upon worshiping various aspects of the heavens. There is even a scholar who has written a paper explaining how most of Christianity is based on worship of the sun god, and most of Judaism is based on worship of Saturn. And most of these traditions have developed from a astrological or astronomical understanding of the different lords of the different times. So we accept as axiomatic truth many things which we have been told, many things which we have learned and accepted and embraced, which were creations from very ancient observations of space, of the sky, of the universe. And by acknowledging that, or by accepting that, you can get a very deep insight into what you are doing right now. Let's say, for example, you're talking with somebody. And let's say you have some kind of history with that person. There was something they did in the past which kind of disturbed you. So all of the interactions you have right now are colored by this previous disturbance. And if you really want to clarify that relationship, if you're really committed to doing so, understanding, acknowledging, accepting, and dealing with that incident which colors everything now is essential. And the exact same thing is there in our present spirituality, which is born of, to a large extent, that which took place before in our lives. Now, I say a large extent and not totally, because there's another factor which we have not talked about, which takes us out of this time-based dependency. And that is our experience. The experiences we have right now, especially our transcendental, quote-unquote, experiences, are that which take us out of time and therefore out of this set of dependencies. I mean, even when I take the mridanga here and we have a kirtan and I chant Hare Krishna, even I say Hare Krishna, a lot of people just get twisted in the head a little bit. I get twisted in the head a little bit. So we can't really relate so good when there's this, like, you know, okay, we're chanting Hare Krishna, but that Hare Krishna is connected to that Hare Krishna, where there's so much like yuck compared to what now, and now I can't enjoy now because of all that stuff from the past, and so I'm stuck. So now this beautiful mantra has problems with it due to associations we make with it. So when it was Gaur Purnima and I was chanting about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's names and everything, that worked okay. And last week I chanted Govinda Jaya Jaya. That worked okay because the associations were not so strong. I mean, that's amazing when you think about it, that there is this very strong reaction that comes when you have to deal with something of the past. You have to deal with some association of the past and make sense of it. Now, I think this debt, or shall we say now the dependency, it's very important to understand how to dissolve it. You cannot dissolve it. You absolutely cannot dissolve it in terms of that which you speak, or in terms of the concepts you understand with others, or in terms of the events that take place in this world, because it's connected to the past and now. So there's absolutely no possibility that you're going to do this, because that's just the way it works. Now, the thing to do is to stop trying to create this freedom from the past, and rather transcend it. And the way to deal with it in terms of transcendence is to stay in the realm of experience as much as possible. In other words, you can't get rid of that association on this level, but you can get rid of all preconceptions on the spiritual experiential level. And when you do that, when you are able to experience on this level of the real spiritual energy of yourself, when you come back down to this level where these time-based dependencies still exist, you see them differently. You're able to deal with them better. You're able to understand them clearer. And you don't have to walk around thinking, oh, they're idiots, or oh, that's stupid, or oh, they're getting me upset now. You can think of it in other terms. You can think of it in terms of, well, they're defining themselves in a certain discipline, in a certain way that's useful for them then. They feel that it's something they need to do now. They feel it's something that gives them something they require. Let it be. And part of what they require is to make sure that people like us, who redefine all things according to our present experience, are not part of what they do. And that's good. Because that's good for us, that's good for them. Hello? That's good for us, that's good for them. In other words, one has to have enough strength internally to actually make a very serious division between what you are and what you are not. And to stand by that very strongly. To stand up for yourself. To accept that I am this way, I'm moving in that way. This is what is right for me. I shall continue with this. I shall not be, shall we say, negatively interconnected with others who are disadvantageous for myself. I acknowledge what they are doing for what it is, without judgment. I accept it for what it is, without a judgment. I respect their right to do it, and I respect their need to do it, without judgment. But I separate myself from it because I've made a very serious and a very powerful judgment where I say, I have nothing to do with that, or I don't want that, or I will take some of that, but I reject the rest of that. I make judgment in terms of what I feel in relationship to that. You can try to make this, shall we say, division between yourself, what you are, and what you are not. But to do this powerfully, you need to rejuvenate with your own experience. When we have these experiences, they rejuvenate our capacities. They rejuvenate our strength. They bring us more in contact with that which we are part of, that whole within which we exist. And in this way, we can deal with these verbal distinctions, these philosophical distinctions, these lifestyle distinctions that we must make to define our lives as individual and separate from others. And then, when we do like this, we can have the great awareness and strength which will allow us to embrace all others, embrace even those we are separate from in that sense, on the level of what we actually are, our spiritual energy, our being. So when we are on these experiences of these transcendental levels, it is timeless. It is not based in anything. It is just our energy, which has no connection to time. It is our spiritual being, which has no connection to time. Okay. It is something which is of another nature. And when we connect more and more to that nature, all historical developments of religion, all concepts of religion, all values of the human being, just disappear from our consciousness. And when we come back to this realm of everyday life from that platform, we do it with much greater strength, much greater awareness, and a capacity to embrace others without having to worry about the way they define themselves in this world.